Welcome to the March Madness edition of the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. I'm joined by the always faithful, always present Randy Boone in a random hotel somewhere. He's in a La Quinta somewhere near Temple or Killeen. Where is he? Where's Randy today?
Next to a Denny's, I'll tell you that.
Oh, have you hit the Denny's yet?
Not yet. Probably in the morning.
Oh man. It's not good food. No, it's not.
You're right.
It's 3:30 a.m. It tastes a lot better.
Nah, I'm joking. I'm gonna go to the QT and get coffee and go and eat a way too big of a lunch.
Awesome. Are you a breakfast guy or a lunch guy?
No, lunch. Lunch and dinner. I really don't eat breakfast much. I like breakfast food. I'll eat breakfast or dinner. Not much of a breakfast guy. I'm not a morning guy in general. You can ask anybody that knows me.
Ideal world, I get up, eat a big breakfast, no lunch, and then big dinner.
That's probably a better approach than mine. But yeah, I thought the non-morning thing was a baseball deal just because, you know, schedules over the years. And I think I've been removed from it long enough to just live with the fact that, yeah, no, just mornings are not my thing.
What time did y'all practice?
I mean, pro ball, you got to the field. I mean, unless it was a day game, you got to the field around 11, get home around 1, 2.
Dude, that's awesome.
It is until you have to transition to a career where everybody wakes up at 5.
Yeah, that's true. Construction stuff, like early bird gets the worm, right?
Yeah. Everybody wants to get you rolling.
You're burning daylight otherwise. That's cool. When is when spring break?
Already had it.
Oh, you already had it. Oh, okay. So
last week.
They haven't had it yet in Houston.
You sure about that?
I think so. When we were in college, when was spring break at Texas? Like early April or late March?
Man, I couldn't tell you. But my in-laws do the Houston rodeo deal, and spring break week is normally their big week. But maybe it's not college. Maybe it's just like the elementary schools and whatnot.
All I know is that South Padre Island was already in the 80s. That's all that matters. And we'd head down there and then drink every day. And the way you staved off getting sick was to just make sure you kept a certain level of
alcohol. Well, we unfortunately had to play games during spring break. So most of us didn't adhere to that schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. That does suck.
Sometimes you play better that way.
That's crazy. Did they ever do a welcome back to practice kind of deal? Like everyone line up, we're going to run?
No, we had a couple of those.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, 3-day weekend, huh? Monday.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, there was a couple of those.
I love that. All right. Well, hey, we've got a number of subjects to tackle. I want to talk about Texas spring football. I want to talk about March Madness. Texas is playing. We're recording this on Wednesday evening. If you listen to this tomorrow morning, we are playing today. But we're playing tomorrow as far as me and Randy's time. And then we can hit on Texas baseball or we could skip it all together. I'm happy to do either.
We'll see how the rest goes.
Okay. So you want to talk hoops?
Maybe.
All right. Let's use that.
Let's do it.
All right. Did you watch any of the Colorado State Virginia game?
A little bit. I saw a little bit.
Virginia's terrible.
I was kind of the opinion, like everybody, all the other talking heads, that maybe we had a better matchup with Colorado State, just because of the lack of proximity there and fans and whatnot. But yeah, after watching Virginia, oof, that was rough. I mean, maybe they shoot better than that normally, but I mean, they always play that style, which is boring as hell. But yeah, Colorado State got a couple players that are pretty good, A, and B, from the state of Texas, that typically works out poorly for us.
Yeah, true. The guys that have Texas circled because we never sent them a recruiting letter. One thing I noticed about Colorado State is a few things. One, very senior kind of team. Lots of fifth-year players, fourth-year players. Joel Scott, he was the guy that scored 23 points basically on the same four or five moves right underneath the basket. And he's like a traditional mid-major tweener, right? He's 6'7", yes, like 225, 230. He's got a handle. He's not very explosive. He's athletic, but he's got a handle. And so if you bring a big out on him, he faces him up and drives to the basket. If you guard him with a small guy, he bangs him inside, like 1987 circa NBA ISO basketball, like turns his butt into the guy and just drives to the hoop. And then he scores on a junk ball move. And I thought Colorado State, they don't have a true post, but they've got a bunch of dudes who are 6'6", 6'7", and they all just run around and they hit the boards. They all spread you out and they drive to the basket. They all cut, and they either cut and sort of play Princeton ball with a bunch of screens, or they just ISO you if they get a matchup they like. And they got a lot of matchups they liked against Virginia. And I heard an interesting stat from Justin Wells. You want to hear this?
Say it in his accent.
Since 2018. No, I don't know.
Yes, lay it on. Please lay it on.
You'd be able to understand it.
Oh, I understand it easy. Yeah.
Since 2018, Virginia has won six NCAA tournament games. All six were in the same year they won the national title. Every other year, they've gone out in the first round.
That is right. Because were they the first one to lose?
Yes.
To a 16? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Man, Purdue did it.
Wow. To me, that's crazy, first of all. And second of all, it sounds like a good time for Rodney Terry to sit down with Dylan Mitchell and go, hey, you see this guy right here? You're better than him. You're more athletic than him. I need you to shut him down.
Yes.
And we can talk about your offense next week or in 2 days from now.
So I wrote a little.
I need you to do that this week.
I wrote a little preview. You and I are thinking the same. So I wrote a little preview on Inside Texas with my thoughts on Colorado State. And one thing I said that we would actually be playing into their hands is if we play our traditional lineup too much with both Hunter and Abmas, because Colorado State actually has, they lack size inside, but they have length on the perimeter. And I think that frankly, Max doesn't really guard anyone. He can't exert ball pressure. And then Hunter is too small to hang with their 6'6 guys. So I think we need to stagger them. I don't like them playing together anyway. I'd like them to – Hunter's not really an off-ball, true off-ball guard, in my opinion. So I'd like to stagger their minutes and get our taller, bigger, athletic dudes who can run out there and defend, because I think that's where we give – the Dylan Mitchells, Weaver.
Weaver in there, yeah.
Ethel Horton, like get those guys out there and we can match their intermediate size and we're better. We've got more athletes and we can bring them for a longer time period.
I'll tell you what I would like to say. I agree with your points there. I would love to see a poll of Texas basketball fans and how big they think Kendall Weaver is. Because I guarantee you 70% of us are wrong, and I'm in the 70%. Because when I looked up his like stats the other day, I was like, oh, wow, he's bigger than I thought he was.
What is he, 6'4"?
I mean, he's not huge, but I had him as like a little – water bug type guy, you know.
Try
hard, you know, he's the energy off the bench guy, and you know, he hustles. I mean, he's a sizable guy. I think, you know, with another year he'll be a solid contributor on the team.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're right. I think it's to use one of your phrases, styles make fights. And I don't think you want to play into theirs. I think you want to dictate it on our side.
The other thing that's really tempting is when you have a size advantage up front, down low, you want to pound it inside. And I think that would not be good for us. I don't think we're very good at it. And I think they just swarm the post. It's the NCAA tournament. They're just going to swarm the post and try to turn them over and be frenetic, right? So I think you need to have Dylan Dessou in the half court. I want to push the ball as much as possible because that's when Colorado State's defensive deficiencies show up. But in the half court, I just want to run everything through Dessou. And have him face up at the elbow or at the three-point line.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if we want to put in a big, great, go have him go hit the boards. But that's also where Dylan Mitchell comes in.
Yes.
I think he's way too athletic and long for them to be able to keep him off the boards on the weak side.
There's multiple ways to attack the rim, and I think you just hit on it. I think you flex Dessou up to the elbow, and if it's one of your bigs down low, with him having the option to pass it down to him, or it could be Mitchell flying in off the wing,
Cut.
back cuts or whatever. I mean, lob over the top, whatever you want to call it. But I think playing it through Dessou with him having space to operate is the key.
Yeah, and I also think that our shooting is best. Like, we're not great creators of our own shot. And I think it's the best when it goes off of someone and then they over-rotate the defense, I mean. And then you've got a guy standing on the backside and you flip it out to him and he's got a set shot and he's ready and waiting for it. Those go through at a really high rate for Texas. Everything else does not. Although, Max can step back and do his thing. But, if you watch Max in the tournament, if you watched him last year against Duke when they stuck their guard on him and said, crush this guy, that's exactly what Duke did. And I think they beat Oral Roberts by like 30. And he's just not physical enough to like hang out and like bring ball pressure and stuff like that. I think they will. They'll do best playing him in spurts and almost alternating him with Hunter. Maybe that's too contrarian. I don't know.
You just hope you get good Hunter, which we haven't seen much, but when we've seen him,
Oh.
it's been great. But man, when he's been, I wouldn't even say bad, when he's been normal this year, it's been bad. But I agree. I mean, we're much better when we can get the basketball, 10 to 15 feet from the rim and create space by kicking it back out than trying to create space with ball screens or head, taking advantage of hedges and stuff out at the perimeter. Because teams that are successful just continue to push us and push us and push us because I don't think we're anywhere near elite at creating off the dribble.
No. Interesting guy. The best player on Colorado State for the year has been this guy from Texas, from Allen, named Isaiah Stevens. He didn't do anything against Virginia. They turned it over to all those 6'6" guys, just sort of, cutting and attacking the rim. But he's their dude. He's their best shooter. He's their best assist guy. It'll be interesting to see what he can do. But I think that we can actually give him problems because I don't think he's used to getting his shot off against longer, more athletic players. There's just not as many of those guys in the Mountain West. Although the Mountain West had six bids to the tournament. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was kind of a sneaky good conference this year. I agree. I agree. That's their guy. The guy that kind of went off in that game was from Texas as well, right?
Yeah, that's the guy I was describing, Joel Scott.
Yeah,
I
is
think
he?
he's from Texas. I'm not sure.
I thought he was, but I could be wrong. I could have been
No,
confusing him.
he's from about 12 minutes from my house. He's from
Oh, okay.
Monument, Colorado.
Then that's my fault. I got them confused because I thought the guy from Allen was the guy but I knew the guy from Allen was their guy, but he didn't have a good game. I thought the other guy was from Texas, so that's my fault on
Yeah.
that.
No,
But
this dude Joel Scott is he went to Lewis Palmer High School in Monument, Colorado. That's literally 10 minutes from my house. My son had flag football games there last summer. So that's interesting. Yeah, wild. Colorado Springs, man. It's a hotbed of athletic talent.
just cranking them out. Cranking
The
them out.
Yoakum of
So
Southern Colorado.
yeah, so yeah, I think we can similarly disrupt that kid, the Allen kid, or the kid from Allen, excuse me. I'm not sure if you're gonna get him for that bad of a performance 2 games in a row,
Yeah.
but I think we have the talent and the athleticism to disrupt him a lot more than what he's seen this year.
Very interesting game. I would like to see Texas advance, obviously. You want to stay in the dance, but the second round matchup with Tennessee and Barnes would be fun.
Are we sure that's going to be the second round matchup?
We think is Tennessee gonna is, are they cruising for an upset?
It's Rick Barnes in the tournament.
That's true. That is true. What are they playing? St. Peter's?
St. Peter's, they of magical run in whatever year
Yeah,
that
didn't they go to the
was.
Elite Eight?
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think Rick Barnes is a really good coach. Don't, I mean, I'm not just at some point history has to talk, but yeah, that would be an interesting matchup for sure.
Hey, you know where St. Peter's is located? I don't know if you've ever been here in your and been there in your pro baseball meanderings. Do you know where St. Peter's is located?
Yes, right next to St. Peter's Church.
Good, good. Jersey
Chicago?
City.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever been to Jersey City?
I've never played a game there, but I have driven through it multiple times.
True crapple.
It's part of the non-Garden State portion of New Jersey.
Yes. If y'all have ever seen the movie Lean On Me, Paterson, New Jersey,
Patterson. Oh, gosh.
that is Jersey City. It is wild.
Had a teammate from Patterson, and some of the stories he told me about growing up are, yeah.
Did he meet Crazy Joe Clark?
I don't know who that is, but he met a lot of crazy. He was, man, he was a great guy, but that dude endured a lot of stuff growing up.
Wow.
Bullpen buddies, we got a lot of stories.
You're killing yourself, Sams. Have you seen Lean On Me?
Jersey City. Ah, man, that's been a hot minute. I can,
It's
yeah.
actually a good, it's good flick.
It's
Morgan
not.
Freeman at his best. All right.
Really? Okay. Interesting. I'll check it out. I like him.
Let's see. Anything else we need to talk about with this basketball team? I don't think like we're well disposed for the NCAA tournament because I think we're at our best sort of running and transition. And the NCAA, they tend to slow things down. And you have all the TV timeouts. Like even when you get out running, it feels like even the structure of the games is against you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna break anything earth-shattering here, but I mean, the NCAA tournament comes down to guard play. What do you get out of Tyrese Hunter?
Yeah.
Does A. Smith continue his ability and what he's done this year on the good side? And then D'Souza's got to stay out of foul trouble.
Yeah, he cannot foul anyone.
If any of those three don't happen, then I don't think it works out very well, but. I don't really have any expectations one way or the other. I mean, obviously, I'd like to see them go as far as they can, but with the way that this current roster is constructed, it wouldn't surprise me, and I'm not going to go jump off at anything if they would happen to lose in round one. I mean, it's year one of Terry, and we've already talked about the whole interim coach thing or whatever. But I mean, I think he did enough last year and this year to, warrant some optimism, but. We'll see what the
Not for
name
me.
you're smiling already. I know it, but recruiting class next year, I think he's got the guard play coming in to give him a shot, and we'll see what it looks like.
Think that is true. I think the provisional nature of commitments now is so, it's almost meaningless, right? I mean,
Especially in a one and done sport like basketball, you're
or
probably right
just
about, yeah.
NIL and transfer in the portal. I mean, in addition to that, right? You could. Like the minute a player doesn't like the vibes, they're out.
Yeah, or hey, one round one exit. Never mind, I'm going to Australia or whatever. So,
Yeah. It's
but
wild.
I'm also not as emotionally invested in basketball as I am in the other sports. So
In football and baseball.
that probably plays into it as well. But I don't know. I think it sets up well for him to win round one. Probably not a great matchup in the next round, but. It's not an unwinnable matchup.
Oh, no, not at all. Hey, speaking of baseball, have you heard of this about this defensive end recruit for Texas who's like 6'6", 260?
Oh, what's the guy from Texarkana?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like 95 left-handed off the mound.
Can you imagine?
Somebody needs to show him some major league pitcher. Contracts.
No, don't. I don't want that to happen.
Not for the sake of our football program, but
Yeah, I was gonna say.
just don't entrust your betting account to your translator.
So, I mean, look, I don't pretend to know pitching development, but my guess is his delivery
Nah, he's a raw athlete
I
that,
mean, this is a dude who could throw 100
yeah,
if they coached him up, right?
I don't know anything about the kid or anything about it, but I think he's on the right path from everything I've heard about his potential football development. So,
Yeah.
but yes, I mean, if he would decide to switch gears, if he's, I'm just guessing that he's just raw athletic and probably doesn't have any, extensive coaching or anything like that. I could be wrong. Maybe he works with somebody, but I mean, if he's as good of a football recruit as everybody says he is, I doubt he's spending a whole ton of time in the cage throwing bullpens and stuff. So,
Oh, I just hope that he has no control whatsoever. And so, the LA Dodgers don't send out a
hey,
scout and go, son, we
what'd you
think
say? You said he's 6'5". Is that right?
6'6", like legit 6'6",
Tell you
260.
what, there's not a whole lot of 6'6" lefties throwing, running around throwing 95. Well, there's more now than there were before, but there's somebody going to be tempted to take a flyer on that kid. I promise you that.
Also, if he does lack control, will he ever have the mound charged? No.
No, not if he plays defensive end. No.
If he
Well, I don't know.
threw, if he threw behind my head, I would still be like, "Hey man, just a little wild. I know it gets away from us. No problem. Let me take my base."
I know the Robin Ventura charging Nolan Ryan's kind of the famous one, but some guy tried to charge Kyle Farnsworth back in the day, and Farnsworth was like 6'7", I don't know, 270, whatever he weighed, and was like a 100-mile-an-hour guy, and he got planted with a form tackle pretty quick. So I feel like it would end about in the same manner.
That's great. I do like when there's the mound charge and the pitcher advances to meet the guy rather than like waits. Because when they're waiting, the kind of implicit thing is like, I'm hoping my first baseman gets here. But when the dude takes two step forward, then you're like, oh, okay, this is gonna be good. You might get a real baseball fight, not just a hold me back baseball fight.
Yeah, those are fun.
All right, man. Is there anything else we need to hit on college basketball? Because we got spring football, my
I don't
man.
think who's your pick?
UConn's the best team, but somehow they drew the worst field. They drew the worst bracket. So I don't, I mean, this is talk about not having any insight. There's just not a dominant team in college basketball, and it's who's hot. Last year's UConn just hit on all cylinders at the right time. I saw it and I made a bunch of money betting on them. And they really came through in a way that I sort of thought they could come through. And then each game I saw them play, I was like, okay, they're winning this all. And I actually had them in my brackets losing in the title game by like a point or something. I don't know why. But 3 games in, I was like, oh, UConn's winning it. Damn. This year, I don't have that feeling, but I want to kind of watch and then see who's vibing. But I do think UConn is the best team. I just think that they have a really bad draw. And basketball, it's not like football. You don't have this inevitability if you're the best team, right? It's you play enough good teams, you can lose. So I don't know.
Very true.
What's your I'll tell you what, I'm fading the ACC after watching Virginia. So
Agreed. No, I don't really have a strong opinion either way. I've watched way less college basketball than I typically do this year. Yeah, I don't really have a strong opinion. I'm with you though. I mean, after watching the opening weekend, I'll probably have a good feel on about three or four teams that I think are really clicking and going. It's just such a weird deal. You play 2 games in 2 days and then you sit and, college kids, who knows? Or, I mean, you can only practice for so long. So, I don't know, it's a weird deal. That's what makes it so interesting, I guess. But, no, I don't have a strong opinion on anybody. I'd be lying if I told you that I knew more about anybody other than UConn and maybe a handful of other teams. So,
well, everyone had San Diego State and Florida Atlantic in their Final Four last year, I'm
yeah,
sure.
absolutely.
So,
If you ask them.
exactly. So yeah, that'll be very interesting. I like March Madness a lot. It's a pretty special event, and I guess my concern, if you want to transition to football, is with the growth of the college football playoff and the emphasis on it, I'm kind of wondering if the regular season's going to lose its power and value the way it has in college baseball, college basketball. I mean, the thing that did make college football so great is that every week, if you're a contender, you are on pins and needles, just like, we can't lose. If we lose, everything falls apart. The season's over. And now it's kind of like, okay, we'll still make the playoff. That's fine.
I think there's enough general interest and fan fervor to keep it from completely happening.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. I think certain games will be but at the same time, it will enhance the fact that, hey, we're going to go play Michigan and be okay with playing that game instead of maybe not.
That is the good part, right? You're going to get, Clemson playing. Who are they playing early in the season? I just blanked.
Yeah, I did. I did the same thing.
Dang. Are they playing Bama? No.
No,
I
that'd make.
can't remember. Dang it.
Go ahead. I'll look it up.
Google
Keep
it
going.
while I waste time. But yeah, I do think that is the cool part. That's the cool counter argument of, hey, you can now play these great out of conference games. And you could have these super conferences effectively, like the Big Ten, like the SEC.
Oh, it's not anybody important.
No, it's not.
Just Georgia. Opening weekend.
Oh, okay, good. Just Georgia. Perfect. Well, we'll get an easy early preview of Georgia's quality. I have a guess how that's going to go,
But no,
but
so it helps those games, but at the same time, those games aren't going to carry the weight, to your point. There's so many fun.
The one thing that does help is that college football, the rivalries, you still want the bragging rights.
And you only get 13 of them.
Yes.
Yeah,
So the
it's
games
that.
still have value.
Correct.
And like, so when you played at Texas, you're going to play a bunch of series with Texas teams, right? And they're all fired up to beat Texas. And some of them will even, change their pitching rotations, right?
Oh, yeah.
Someone's going to beat, it's baseball. So one of those Texas teams is going to beat you in a series, right? You're going to win most of them. But it was kind of like, if it wasn't A&M, you were kind of like, okay, whatever. Next game, next week, next series. Football's not going to become that. But it does take a little something away of that absolute urgency and just the wreck that you are when your team stumbles early or pulls out, when Texas in 05 pulled out that one in Ohio State in Columbus, I was on freaking cloud nine because I was like, we are playing in the national title game. Like this happened, right? So I don't know. We're going to have to experience it, but I tell you this, the playoff ain't going to retract. It's going to expand and it ain't going to stay the
Oh
same.
no, yeah, it's getting bigger.
If it's going to go to 16, we're more likely to have a 24 team playoff than stay at 12,
You're right.
which would drive me nuts.
Yeah, I'm fine with where we are and maybe taking it to 16. Not really, but anything more than that, I think anything more than that, then you definitely get into then. What are we doing?
You ever seen the movie, the documentary, I should say, This is Spinal Tap?
Yes, I have.
It one of the great movies of American cinema. And Christopher Guest has the great scene where he has the amplifier that goes to 11 instead of to 10. And the guy's like, why don't you just have 10 be the loudest? And he's like, but it goes to 11, right? He's mystified. He can't understand the idea of scale or relativity. I've got a financial guy that goes to 11. His name is David McClellan. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. I've extolled the virtues of Mr. McClellan before, a multi-national championship Texas swimmer, a partner with Forum Financial Management, a registered fiduciary investment advisor. If you're managing your own money, chances are it's suboptimal because you don't have the time or knowledge to do your very best. You don't know what you don't know. And frankly, you can't always make decisions with the detachment and objectivity that you need because it's your money. If you're working with another advisor, chances are their advice is conflicted or very narrow in scope. David works broadly with you wherever money touches your life. So if you've built some wealth or you're in the process of accruing significant wealth, David's a guy you need to talk to. Set up a call, pick his brain, let him pick your brain, and see if there's an opportunity to work together. If there is, great, go forward. If there isn't, you got 30 minutes of great advice from a really good guy. And David's really liberal with that advice and pretty generous in helping other people. In addition to, of course, working really well for his clients. So give him a call, 312-933-8823. And then in a more narrow scope, if you're looking for a house, you're buying a house, the Fed just met today. Randy, I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I was watching it while I was driving.
Oh, perfect. No. Great.
No, I was not.
Sounds very safe. Actually, that there are people doing that.
I'm sure there are, but
I've loved the videos on YouTube of guys who are like either watching television on their phone or they're like reading a book while they're driving, like on the Washington Beltway. It's like, oh, that's great.
It's really
good. Hey, if you are in the market, interest rates are easing, and I think later in the year there's opportunity for them to ease a little bit more. If you want to work with a mortgage guy who really knows how to work a deal, you need to talk to Gabe. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Gabe is a lifetime rabid Longhorn fan. He is a guy with a law degree, a former National Merit Scholar, really sharp guy, and frankly, a cut above the average mortgage dude. He is not a quote monkey. He's a guy who crafts financial solutions for you and really knows how to work the system to get you the best possible deal. Reach out to him. Really good dude. And, you know, has way too many opinions about sports that he tries to infect me with. But, you know, Randy and I endure. We deal with it.
Yeah.
And God help me when Astros season starts again and I start getting texts.
Oh, it started for him. It's already started for Gabe. It started.
For some reason, you like to include me on these Astros texts. Why? What insight am I going to offer y'all? What?
You should see the ones I don't include you on.
Even better. Thank you, Randy.
Most of those are like, oh, man, I want Paul to see this.
All right. Well, if you're in the house, Randy and I will agree. That's a guy you want to be included with if you're looking for a mortgage and looking for a house, and no matter what your situation. So give him a call, 832-557-1095. And very finally, if you're in the Centex area and you need a realtor, go with one of the best. Go with one who's a high volume elite. And gets it done. Here's the deal with realtors, Randy. If you only need one realtor for the deal to go through, all right, whether you're the seller or the buyer, okay, there's two realtors in the transaction. If one of them is incompetent, the other one can pull you over the finish line, right? They'll get it done. If you have two excellent realtors, great. It's going to be seamless and flawless. If you have two bad realtors, something will go horribly and awfully wrong. So don't play the guessing game. Go get a good realtor. Get Laura. She'll pull the other realtor if they stink across the finishing line. If the other realtor is great, then even better. The process is seamless. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505. An award-winning member of the Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. Thank you. Thank you for your support, Laura. All right. I've done my financial spiel for the sophisticated Everyone Gets a Trophy listeners. Let's talk spring football, dude. Arch Manning, he's gonna beat out Quinn by what? The third non-padded practice?
That's what all the national pundits are saying, right?
Just the beauty of his spirals. The command.
Yep, no,
Manning vibe.
I let you keep going, but no, it's not happening.
All right, sorry.
He will be ready to play in the event of something happening, but I expect Quinn to have a big year.
I agree. I think he will. And look, I love Inside Texas. I love the reportage there. I love the analysis. It's the best there is in the Longhorn internet kingdom. But even we at Inside Texas, we cover these non-padded, effectively like, they're just screwing around, right? And they're just getting, you know, running around and running in the right place. And you know, we're trying to evaluate offensive linemen based on like how they're firing out on air, right? And it's just kind of funny. You can get a sense of how guys look. You can get a sense
of who's
in shape. You know, that's all good. I don't underestimate that. But it is funny. It is the underwear Olympics. So we're in the early stages of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely information to be had, and yeah, you can get good intel on certain things. But I mean, yeah, you got to talk about something. So you might as well zero in on the fact that the helmet communication is going to do away with all the signals on the sidelines until everybody realizes that, hey, everybody still goes no huddle.
Yes.
So the quarterback's not just going to yell the play to everybody. That was my favorite one of the offseason. It's like, oh, no more big random signs and purple shirts and all this. It's like, no, you can only tell the play to one guy verbally.
Yeah. So
if you want to huddle, that's fine. And I think Sark he's already been want to huddle more than, or at least sugar huddle more than most people do.
Yep.
And that the 15-second cutoff thing will be interesting to see. I'll be interested to see when we break the huddle. Let's put it that way.
Can you imagine being the quarterback and you're walking up to the line and you hear the head coach go, hey, Randy, you never, and he gets cut off. And you're like, oh no.
I wonder what he's going to say. Let me look around real quick. What do we got?
You throw a pick six.
Which could be, but that just depends on your quarterback. I mean, some of that could be good. Some of it could be a little too much. And
well, you know, Sark actually addressed that in his press conference, which was great. And he said, look, my concern is not the communication, it's over communicating.
Oh, like, really? That's interesting. He talked on that. I didn't hear his press conference.
He said, I need to be able to tell him in like four or five words where we're on the same page, or, you know, as he's walking to the line, just say free safety. Look at him.
Great point. Great point by him. Yeah.
As opposed to, it looks like they're in cover two. I think they're just showing that. Well, it looks like, I mean, make sure you line up, you know, identify the mic. And it's like, dude, just get out of my ear. Like, I'm trying to play football.
Way too much at that point. Like, yeah. Do you like your play call or not?
Yes. So one thing I know, so my cousin was a naval pilot and really good guy. And one of the things when you do aircraft carrier landings, right? It's not just that it's a small little postage stamp you're trying to land a very fast plane on. It's that the ocean is not static. And especially in deep blue sea, the deck is tilting. It's rising and falling 30 and 40 feet every second, right? And you have to kind of time it. And doing it at night is really harrowing, right? And so there's a guy that's on the boat guiding you in, calling you in. And what they teach those guys is you speak very even tones. You don't say very much. Mm-hmm. And you communicate like very calmly. And then when you want someone to do something, you don't go, da, 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 pull up. Because someone's going to like jerk the stick up and then you get a disaster, right? But you go, ease, like that's like, you know, the way they communicate to each other. And they just have like 8 or 10 words they used. They don't say stuff like, hey, kind of, hey, sort of like pull that. Like there's none of that, right? It's like, you know, throttle back, perfect, great, looks good. You know, and it's just like those, that's how you communicate. I think you're going to have that, almost that kind of shorthand with a college quarterback in the comm system. Here's the other part of the comm system, Randy, and this is going to happen. If one of the teams says our comm system isn't working, you know what the other team has to do? Can't use theirs.
Tell them, sorry, get better comm systems. Not my problem.
No, so this no, happens right. In the NFL.
Right. Oh, it happens all the time. You got to kill it. Yeah.
So what teams do is they practice signals all week. And they practice hurry up. And then their plan is to say, our comms aren't working. No, we're picking up a CB radio. We're picking up a Chick-fil-A drive-through window. They need to get off their comms. So that
You
is
gotta think.
something that has happened in the NFL. It's happened in playoff games, and it's something that will happen in college football, guaranteed.
You got to think that there's somebody assigned to that, right? From a refereeing standpoint, or there should be. I mean, let me rephrase that. You got to think there should be somebody from a refereeing standpoint that can get that. But at the same time, I guess you can still make the same point. Be like, I don't care that y'all can hear it. My guy
Yeah,
can't
I
hear it.
can't hear a word.
So unless you put him in his helmet, you can still lie.
And then, well, so the
Excuse
ref
me.
needs to yell, "Hey, your
Yeah,
wife's a
just.
whore." And then when the guy responds, you go, "Ah, you can hear."
Yep, exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly. That's exactly. I think that should be in the rule book,
Should
honestly.
be in the rule book. It
Should
should
be
be on
in
a
the rule
little
book.
index card. Turn to this if this happens and then read this.
But it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But yeah, that was my initial thought when everybody was like, "Oh, this solves everything." It's like,
No.
no, it doesn't.
And there's a lot of like posts where like, oh, Sark can explain to Quinn as he's walking to the line of scrimmage. It's like, no. It's going to be very spare communication trying to convey a sub like a broader like, hey, Quinn, yeah, maybe he can change the protection, right? Maybe that'll happen. But the defense knows that
I
And
don't
the
see that
defense is
being.
the defense is the unit that can move everybody right before the snap of the ball, right?
Yeah, I just don't see that being something that Sark's into. Like, I don't think he wants to operate that way. Like, he wants the training to happen or have happened already.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that you might not be walking to the line of scrimmage and he goes single high and then Quinn knows, hey, that play's dead because we talked about it all week. That if you see single high in Razor Twins flip go, it's out. Like it's not a single high play. But in terms of him coming up to the line of scrimmage and be like, hey, Quinn, look over here and see, I don't see that as something that he's interested in at all.
I agree. And I think you'll have simple communications, right? And you'll have a shorthand that both of you know what the other person's they're saying more than just
Yes.
that one word is conveying.
Yes.
Or Sark, as they're breaking the huddle, might just say, kill it.
Yeah. Kill it. What do you see? I see him. I see him more as the coach that wants to empower his quarterback because he trusts what he has trained him to do, rather than wanting to joystick him from the sidelines, especially with the
Agreed.
third, especially with the third year starter.
Could you imagine Jimbo Fisher
No.
with sideline comms?
No. I think the quarterback would
Okay,
probably.
drop back
I think he'd
three
play without a
steps.
helmet.
Okay,
He'd take
keep
his
the ball
helmet
up
off.
high near your ear.
He'd take his helmet off and be like, "I'm done. I'm just gonna do my own thing out here. If you want to take me out, come get me."
Exactly.
Oh man, no, that would be. Yeah, you're probably right on that. And I bet there's a lot of coaches out there that we don't know about because we're not that familiar with all of that stuff. That would operate the same way.
Hey, speaking of come get me in baseball, has there ever been a pitcher that's been like, no, I'm not going.
Yes, me, multiple times. There's a reason that the manager like makes the motion at the foul line because he's locked in. It's like, no, you're not taking me out. It's like, I already took you out. Sorry, you like,
But I mean, at that, you could still say no.
oh yeah, I've done it before. Like I've waited for the guy. I didn't pro yeah, I didn't do I never did it in college. I didn't have the stones to do it in college. But in pro ball, I stood on the mound a couple times and waited for the reliever to get out here and be like, now what are you gonna do?
You should have sat down.
We're both here.
Sit down on the mound
No
and
one's
like
here. But it's a pride. It
start digging.
it's just a pride. Yeah, it's just a pride thing at that point. You know you're out of the game. You're just trying to make a point. You're just trying to make a point at that point. The worst one is when you're through 4 2/3 and you're up by six
Yes.
and you give up a single and a double and it's runners on second and third and you're up by six and you see him coming out and you're like, dude, I need one more out to qualify for the win. Seriously, like, come on.
That's
But it happens a lot.
selfish.
But no, but
Selfish.
yes,
That's a
no, there are
selfish pitcher.
that has happened Yeah, well, when you're overseas, those wins count a lot more. There's
Yeah.
monetary value attached to them, Paul.
I wanted to talk to you about that. So my understanding, you could plead the fifth or you can confirm or not confirm. My understanding is overseas, you're bonused
Oh, for
like per
everything.
game, per thing that occur. Like if you have nine strikeouts, it has a monetary value to you at the end of the game. Like someone's going to hand you some cash.
Everything
True or false?
overseas is negotiable
Okay.
for your original contract. I mean, if you want a bonus per strikeout, if you want a bonus per inning pitched past five, if you want a bonus to qualify for the win, quality start. I mean, they got to be willing to give it to you. But yes, no, there it is very, very much a pay for play scheme. It's
I dig it.
fun. And it's all about winning. Like there's no player development over there. Like they don't care. They could have brought you in on $1,000 a season contract. And if they put you in and you perform and the guy that they're paying a ton of money to didn't, you're pitching the next game.
I didn't know that. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you are playing to win the game. And that's what was so fun about that is you got back to the root of real baseball and as close as you can get to professional, like, excuse me, I just did my own thing. Major League Baseball.
I did that to you once. I felt really bad.
Yeah, it's still professional baseball, everyone. It's still you're getting paid, not very much. No, but it's as close as you can get to a big league atmosphere. And to be honest with you, sometimes it probably even surpasses a big league atmosphere because early in the season, a lot of big league teams don't really adhere to that same philosophy because you got,
There's
clock starting.
investments,
Yeah,
and
you got
a GM is
investments, you got
tied to a
clock
guy, or
starting,
a
and
scout is tied to a guy. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I wasn't really in Taiwan long enough, but in Venezuela and Dominican, no, they're in it to win. And
Awesome.
I don't care if you're the 47th guy on the roster. If you're the guy that you are backing up got hurt and you went two for two and he said he can play the next day. Sorry. Two for two guys
Wow.
in. Now you
That's
may be out the
wild.
next day if you don't get a hit, but yeah.
That's cool though. That's the core.
No,
That's like
that's what made it so enjoyable.
it's the true game.
That's what made it so enjoyable.
That's fun. That's awesome. Hey, is there any particular position group that you're looking at in the spring that you want to see progress or, I mean, I know you want to see it from everything, but is there a group that has your curiosity, has your interest?
Equal parts D line and secondary.
Yeah, I agree.
Secondary for a different reason. I think I want to see more how the pieces fit because I think the pieces are there. D line, I want to see how the pieces perform or if maybe we should be looking for additional pieces.
So Ian and I did a deep dive on this on the Inside Texas YouTube channel. And what we're pointing out, and we kind of both independently came to this conclusion, which is good. We didn't talk about this before, but we have to play the D line, particularly the interior D line, differently this year.
As it's currently constructed, yes, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton and Jhené Bledsoe, they're not two gapping, like bring on your double team, we'll still stuff your inside run game, right?
Yes.
They need to take gaps. They need to get upfield. They need to penetrate. They need to disrupt and use their quickness and movement.
Well, did y'all hit on one thing that a lot of people, I think, are, I wouldn't say confused on, but just from general football theory would be surprised to know, or maybe they all know it, and I'm the only one that was sort of surprised at too. But Tavondre played three technique almost all the year, and Murphy typically played the nose a lot. Maybe it was just the games that I paid attention to, but you would normally think that was flipped. So I don't know if they're going to deploy in the same manner this year to where the disruptor is more over the center.
Bledsoe.
I would agree. I mean, I think especially if you're going to play more of a aggressive style, Like let's get aggressive over the guy that's not ready at the snap. Like, just, I mean, it's an inside out game. I mean, if you get pressure over the center, then things would go crazy pretty quickly. But there's just a ton of people I talked to that were like, man, we got to replace Sweat at nose tackle. It's like, you haven't really played there.
Yeah, and the thing that was interesting about Murphy and Sweat is they could do whatever you called, like whatever you
And you
wanted the
could,
defense to do.
and if they, if they motioned or whatever, we had to flip strength on defense. Yes, you're correct. They were interchangeable.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
And they were fully capable of penetrating. They were fully capable of being like, you're going to need four dudes to block the two of us. I don't see Alfred Collins anchoring the way Byron Murphy or Tavondre Sweat can anchor. I saw Tavondre Sweat, Randy, against Oklahoma State. They ran no huddle up to the line of scrimmage on a third and short or a fourth and short. I can't remember. And Tavondre had not gotten in his stance yet. And they fired out and doubled him and ran the ball at him. And he stood there and grabbed both offensive linemen and sort of just threw them back into the ball carrier and like they had a negative gain, like it was a negative run, and we stopped them. Tavondre Sweat didn't get in his stance.
Yeah,
Like
those two are
Alfred
basically,
Collins can't do that. He's really
no, they're,
athletic, but he can't do that.
no, they're irreplaceable. Now, can you scheme the guys you have to perform in a similar manner? Yes, probably. But that's where I'm more interested to see, can those guys perform well enough in a altered scheme, same scheme? What do we have to do to make that successful? Because you're looking at basically Collins, Bledsoe, Mitchell,
Broughton.
and Broughton, and then the transfer from Arizona, right? As your
Yep.
interior guys.
Yep.
How do those pieces work, or do they not work? And do you need a couple more pieces and make that one big rotation to I mean, you're never going to want to get into a situation to where, hey, these two guys are in. We know what Texas is doing.
Yeah.
But you can play to their strengths at the same time.
I think complementary to that is you're going to have some edges where the edges options are going to be considerably better this year.
Yes.
And not just natural improvement of players like Baron Sorrell. He's gotten better every year. There's good reason to think that our tall, rangy white guys from Westlake are going to get better. Ethan Burke and Vosick. You got Colin Simmons. You got that transfer from UTSA who word is like his first 5 yards off the ball are lightning. You've got Jamar Tapp, you've got Jamon Tapp. You've got all these different guys. I just think that they're all going to present different body types and different strengths. And I think you're going to have Texas is going to be comfortable playing four or five different guys on the edge and no drop off.
Agreed.
And so, from a pure depth standpoint, this D line is extremely deep. We just need some guy. We need some guys to be a problem, and not just, good player or solid player.
Yeah, I think it's much less tip of the spear,
Yeah.
oriented as it was last year, to more of a flattened.
Crowdsource.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, I agree.
But
Hey,
no, I think
so.
the pieces are there. It just, the question is, do we need to maybe add one more?
Yeah.
Is it, we'll see.
Well, Michigan's on like their third D line coach, so maybe we can go get one of their big boys.
Is the third one the guy that just got thrown in jail, or is that the second?
Yes. Yeah, he's the DUI, and I think it's like his third.
And I mean,
So.
I don't mean to make light of that, but yeah, that's not a good situation up there, because they lost the one followed Harbaugh, right?
Yes. Well, actually, not to
You
make
better,
light of it, but
they better
explain
hope
to
those guys
me,
love Michigan.
in this day and age how you keep getting DUIs if you're someone who makes six figures. Uber, Lyft, taxi cabs. Your car's parked somewhere. It will be fine. It can stay there the night. You can come back in the morning and go get it. Like your professional career is at stake. You're worried about a $70 Uber ride?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I mean, drunk driving, let's cards on the table, much more prevalent in the 90s. When I was in college, people drunk drove all the
Oh,
time. And talk, people talk about societal changes. That's one for the positive, for sure. Ride shares, all that stuff. People, you don't really have an excuse anymore. Like, I guess I'm trying to figure out the psychology of it.
I don't know. And I don't know, I'd be interested in the story, but yeah, I mean, it's multiple offenses for a guy that's been pretty successful in his life, so.
Yeah. Mean, because I'm not even asking, like, why do you drink? Like, I understand what an alcoholic is. I'm compelled to drink. Sorry. But yeah, I know it's affecting my life. I'm an alcoholic, right? This is, hey, you're too drunk to drive. Like, just get a cab, call Uber, call Lyft. Like, you're a freaking Michigan football coach. Walk over to someone that's sober and go, hey, can you give me a ride home? And they'll be like, sure, coach.
Was he a
Weird.
Martin, was he a Martindale guy that he brought in or no?
I don't know. That's actually a good question. Martindale, that's going to be a really interesting matchup against Texas early in the year. That because that Michigan defense, people think that they've been depleted. They have not.
I'm just interested to see what he does there versus what his track record is. Does he stay true to I have
Crazy blitz.
every blitz package known to man, and I'm using them all. Or does he regress to the mean of most college defensive coordinators that are successful and go, "Hey, my guys are better than your guys. We're just going to kind of
Play ball.
play ball, and we'll see what happens. And then if I need to adjust about halfway through the season, we'll throw some stuff in there."
There's a few things in tension here that are really interesting with Martindale. For about 10 years, he was the best defensive coordinator in the NFL, or one of the top three.
Nah, he was up there. You're right.
And he kind of lost his mojo because he got predictable and he started to over blitz. And teams kind of figured out his blitz system. And then he was getting worked over, and his attitude was like, double down, blitz harder, right? And then he gets fired. He gets moved out. I don't know if he was fired or resigned under pressure, but that Baltimore system is still was still that was employed by the guy who his predecessor at Michigan. He just had a different version of it.
Yes.
And so the question is Martindale, was he learned from that? Or is actually at the college level, are offenses too rudimentary to exploit some of those crazy blitz packages and all the disguise? Or is he going to get punished for it when he runs into a guy like Sark? I don't know. But I do know that Michigan's defense is going to be good. The personnel are good. It's their offense that got freaking obliterated. And we don't know if Alex Orji can throw up spiral. That's going to be the new potential quarterback at Michigan. So,
Say Orbi, like the little things that blow up when you put water on
Orji,
them.
even better,
Oh,
Orji, but with a J.
that's even, yeah. All right. Well, I thought I was making a joke, but the joke made itself.
So, to
So.
give you an idea, this dude, he's about 6'3, 235, and he is overall physical testing. He's the most athletic player in the Michigan program. Very good runner, very powerful. Very inconsistent thrower is the rap on him. Now, Michigan may just Sharon Moore likes to run the ball.
I say,
And
sounds like a guy that played about 2,500 miles to the southeast of them.
yes. So at worst, he's kind of like KJ Jefferson, right? But I think he's more athletic, like as a runner, but we don't know how good he is as a passer.
Interesting.
So, and then Michigan's offensive line needs to be completely rebuilt. Wide
Oh,
receiver.
they lost more than their starters, or they're
Yeah,
going
they
to
lost
lose more than their starters.
everything.
That's
Yes.
crazy. That I mean,
Yes.
when has that ever happened in college football, by the way? Like,
It's going to start happening now because of the
true.
portal and 6-year players and all that stuff. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. It's going to be a great game. And playing them in the big house is no joke. So
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's going to be a great game. I'm really excited for it. And it's going to tell us a lot about Texas. It's going to tell us a lot about the upside of this team. Might be some shades of Columbus 2005. We'll see.
Agreed. Didn't, yeah. Should have thought of that earlier, but you're correct.
Is there a, and by the way, that Ohio State team had some unrest at quarterback, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Our buddy Drew Kelsen forced that fumble late in the game that was pivotal. So, and I think that was the Ohio State quarterback that they benched. And then the next week it was Troy Smith, right? I can't remember.
Man, that's a long time ago. Did didn't Smith come in late in that game?
I don't know. I'm too old. I
I
don't
don't know. I don't know. I've
know.
slept. I've slept since then.
Craig Krenzel was the quarterback. I don't know
I
either.
do. I do remember the quarterback deal. I can't remember how it all exactly played out. Remember the catch in the corner of the end zone. That's all that matters.
That's right. Dang right. Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on the defensive backs too. I think the talent's there. I think the bodies are there. I think they've got a lot of interesting options. They need to figure out their best five and not just sort of have a, well, like this guy graduated, so this guy replaces him. It's like, no, is Jadé Barron one of the best corners on the team? If he is, he needs to start at corner. And then if you think you can replace him capably at nickel, then that may have an effect on you who you thought your free safety was going to be. And you know, like that's fine. But to me, spring is about experimentation, particularly on defense. Like try different stuff.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. You may need to identify a big nickel for certain
Yes.
weeks.
Maybe.
Maybe your nickel can play both, but you may need to a Blackwell or somebody like that that's a little more of a tweener than a true nickel. I don't
But
know.
Barron, despite his size, if he does play nickel, he's so good on that like support stuff.
Agreed. But I would worry more about him being able to physically hold up for 9 or 8 games in our current conference versus the former.
I also think that good point. I think that we just run our base defense.
True.
And that's another reason to put Jadé Barron at corner. I don't like taking that guy off the field when we put in our base defense, right?
Forgive my ignorance on this, but how big is Makuba?
185.
So it roughly the same size as Baron or a slightly bigger.
He's a cover guy. Yeah, he's a finesse guy.
And just I think the nickel has to travel this year. I don't think we can get boxed into, hey, if you set the formation a certain way, you can isolate him over here, essentially doing nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the defensive structure well enough to have a well-informed opinion on that. I just know that last year it was kind of ridiculous that we allowed the opposing offense to take our best player out of the scheme just by alignment.
Hey, did you see the reporting weight for Kendrick Blackshire?
No, I don't think so.
262.
Wow, that's pretty big.
Yeah, I think he needs to play in the 240s. I'm just going to go out on a limb, but he's got plenty of time to get there. But
He and from what I understand, he and Savion Red maybe need to go on the same diet.
yeah, you know what? It's football. Like you can bulk
Oh,
out
you can,
in the
yeah, you can.
spring and then you'll get round up in shape. But it is so a couple of guys who went out to see the practice said they saw him and double taked and they were like, "Who's this nose tackle?" Who's this young nose tackle?
This guy. Oh, that's interesting.
But they said he looks every bit of 262.
Well,
And
originally when I had read the red thing, I was like, well, maybe they're gonna flip him to the defensive side and let him go, see what happens. But I don't know. I guess he's
play
still
what?
running. I don't
Linebacker?
play go find the ball and kill people guy.
Is that the technical position name?
For him, probably.
That's kind of like, you know, how teams always have this stupid name for their safety. Like, this is the bandit. This is the hero. This is the murder guy, or, you know, whatever they have.
I don't know.
This is the cougar position. We should have just the guy runs around and kills people.
Still, I'm still a fan of Jordan Whittington playing safety, so
Well, I think
I'm gonna keep hanging on to it.
that train has left the station.
Yeah, a couple years ago, but
Yeah. Hey, there was a pro day.
today, right?
Yeah, JT Sanders repped on the 225 and did eight. Why did he even do it?
He did what?
Eight. He did eight reps at 225.
Oh, man.
Why did he even do it?
Yeah, what?
Just don't if you
Wow,
think you're
that's
gonna do
weird,
that
man.
badly, don't lift. Don't do the lift. Did he
Maybe
pop his
tweak. I was
shoulder
about to say, did he tweak something
while doing it?
in the early reps? I refuse to believe he only can do eight.
I mean, I could do eight when I was like a sophomore in high school. So
Yeah, but you work out outdoors in San Francisco, so you're a different breed.
I don't live in San Francisco, Randy. I've lived in
You
Colorado
did
for
though.
2 years.
You did though.
Well, when I was a sophomore in high school, I did not live in San
You did.
Francisco. I promise you.
Right. You lived on the east side.
I went to school there in eighth grade.
I
Yeah.
refuse to believe he can only do eight.
I think he can.
Something had to happen.
Something must have happened, but if it didn't happen, he got a bad advice.
Who else
So,
did the bench?
I think everybody. I don't know.
Really?
I think Jalen Ford did like 18 or 20 or something. I don't know.
I gotta look this up. That's crazy.
It's funny. I don't get too caught up in it, but you don't want to be an outlier, right?
No, you just want to be boringly in the middle.
Yes, like boringly do your 17 reps or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like people just go, okay, fine, check. But yeah, I thought that was wild.
But yeah, no, if he can only do eight, then yes, his agent needs to be fired for allowing that to happen.
Poor advice.
Ugh.
That's not good.
Something had to happen. I can't
Hey,
do it.
is there a baseball equivalent of the combine, or is it just people work you out privately and what I'm saying? I know there's not like a combine. I mean, but my point is,
I mean, yeah,
are there
yes.
metrics, or is it just you just like, yeah, he throws 91, we timed you, and we can look at your control, right?
It's changed. Yeah, it's changed over the years with the spin rate measurements and
I
stuff
mean,
like that.
have you ever been tested in any way? Like,
I
we
mean,
need
there's a
your
lot of
height,
bull.
your weight, your body fat. We want to look at you in your underwear. We want you to do a vertical jump. Like, has anyone ever done that in baseball?
Yeah, I mean, every spring training we had to do it. You did body fat, you did a vertical, you did your running test, you did three cone.
Are you serious?
I was like, what are we doing? Like this, yeah. Hey, you had to do 300-yard shuttle run, and you had to make it underneath a minute with a minute break in between the two.
Like,
So you had
congratulations,
to
you've
do
qual.
two. You had to do two, and you had to average under a minute. So everybody would try to run as fast as they could on the first one, and then just
Cruise.
hope your legs didn't give out on the second one. But yeah, we did vertical. We did three cone drill. It's like
And you qualified to be a female firefighter.
I don't. But yeah, I mean, in baseball, you're evaluated constantly,
In
not,
games.
not, well, in games, but no, I mean, you're evaluated constantly, not in the element of play, because I mean, you sit there, like I said, with the TrackMan stuff and the pitch shapes and spin rates and all that stuff. In theory, that all helps and whatever, but to quote the late great Augie Garrido, the hitter will let you know how good your shit is that day.
That's great. That is really
So
good.
I mean I mean yeah, you can sit there and throw a bullpen, you can hit every spot and everything's great, and you're backdooring your slider perfectly and you got this going and whatever, and you roll out of the mound and throw that same pitch and have it rocketed in the gap, and it's like, oh well, yeah, it's not that good, never mind.
Well. That's
But
interesting.
yeah, it's a sport where you get evaluated more often. You get evaluated in BP off of 40-mile-an-hour fastballs.
Yeah.
You get evaluated fielding ground balls and making throws in the outfield and everything when nothing's at stake and in and out. And you get evaluated in bullpens. And then an eighth of the time you actually play somebody and you really get evaluated. But most of the evaluation that goes into who gets to play in the eighth of the time happens in a non-game setting. So yeah, it's kind of
Interesting.
similar, really.
Interesting.
But eventually, if you do not get it done in game time, then that takes precedence over the other one. It just depends
Well,
on how
just like
much.
football.
It just depends on how much money they gave you.
Yes. They'll give you more leeway because there's jobs on the line, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah.
I mean, I just was wondering if there are physical measures beyond like how fast I throw. But so they're
I think big
like
physical pitchers will always be valued more than the smaller guys just because of
because
the duration.
they think
Just
Tim Lincecum is going to break, right?
durability.
Yeah.
Durability's, you know, it, and that's a proven track record over the years. Like, there's definitely more. I'm going to use the name of the guy that was the Toronto Blue Jays icon when I was there. Unfortunately, gone from us, but you know, Halliday, 6'7", just absolute specimen. Like, I think he'd go through 200 pitches and he'd go through 200 pitches again on 3 days rest over and over and over and over again. That guy is more prevalent than the Lincecum because that guy has proven to be more durable. Now, does that mean that Tim Lincecum style body can't survive 10 years in the big leagues throwing 200 and whatever innings? But at the same time, in the modern game, people aren't asked to throw that many innings anymore. So maybe you go find more of those smaller electric twitchy guys and they throw 5 innings a game and then you turn it over to the bullpen like everybody wants to do now. So I don't
Did I ever tell you, speaking of San Francisco, I for a time period there was a San Francisco Giant who lived in my apartment complex. And when I say complex, it was a small apartment, like 12 total units, and we had a cool roof deck. And I went up on the roof deck one time, and Tim Lincecum was up there with him and another dude smoking dope. I was like, "Hey, what's up?" And he had an interesting body. He was wiry. Like
I was just about to say, wiry.
he looked like Allen Iverson.
Yes.
Like he was a white, he's like a white skater kid. Like, have you ever seen like kids at a skate park that are athletic and they have that long, wiry body and weird angles on their joints and stuff? And that's how he could whip the ball, you know, and throw it with that kind of power. I mean,
I mean, the whole
the
thing's
dude must
about
have weighed
leverage.
165, 170 dripping wet.
Man, you're probably heavy, but yeah,
Yeah.
small guy for
But
sure.
nice guy. But he was, and he wasn't short. He was like 6 feet tall.
Yeah,
But
no, he. I think people underestimate his height, but he was tiny. Yeah, it's not like he was 5'5". You know,
no.
he was a decent height guy. He was just tiny.
Yeah. Very interesting. A lot of different body types can throw a baseball hard, right?
Very
I
much so.
almost equate it to boxing. Like you look at Tommy Hearns, like young Tommy Hearns.
Very true.
And you're like, that guy hits hard. He's just skinny. And it's like, yeah, he hits real hard. Like
It's sort of the
he's
same.
generating torque that you can't fathom.
Well, I'm glad you used the word torque. It's kind of the same principle.
Yeah.
How much torque can you generate? Now, granted, the end result is slamming your fist into somebody versus transferring it into a, you know, small spherical object, but that's the name of the game. I mean, there's plenty of big, strong people that can't throw a baseball harder than 60 miles an hour because they can't generate the kinetic chain reaction that results in the torque required.
Yeah, that's why I was almost wondering is because of that weird superpower, right? That's your it's your anthropometry too. It's like even how your joints are connected and your tendons are connected and how far back you can rotate your shoulder, right? I mean, I'm telling you stuff you know, but that's why there's like in football, if a dude is a football player, not just, you know, if he deadlifts 700 pounds, I can assure you he's strong on the football field. You will
Yes.
feel it, right? To your point, a dude could bench 405 and squat 550, and he may not throw a baseball more than 55 miles an hour.
One measurable, I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot about that a while ago. We did always get measured for internal and external rotation.
Interesting.
We did it more as a baseline versus what's happening to you over the course of the season type thing.
Oh, so what's your change?
Correct. So if you started to really diminish, then you needed to focus on mobility, flexibility, whatever, because you kind of should have been what you were at that point. Now you could, maybe you could increase by a little bit over the off season, but consistent throwing over the course of the season, you were just trying to maintain a, I guess, a measured decrease. But if you went, foop, oh my goodness, you just dropped 10 degrees, then red flags went up and it was like, oh, hey, we need to jump on this. Something's wrong.
Well, you know how Tom Brady actually got a stronger arm in his mid-30s from working with Tom House?
Right. I
That
mean,
was a lot of that. And so a part of it, and the thesis for Tom House was, like, you're a football player. You're constantly hurt and getting dings, and you don't realize the degree to which you're altering your purest throwing motion to compensate for the fact that you have a partially separated shoulder. Right. Or whatever. Right. That's dramatic. But you,
Right.
my
No, you're
point is,
right.
you have a bunch of bumps and bruises, and you're constantly. And so his point was, I need to get you very pliable, and I need to increase your rotation. And, Brady was a harder thrower of the ball at age 38 than he was at 24.
Brady's separation was one of the best that I think I've ever seen. That's a kind of a overused baseball term, but being able to separate your hip motion from your upper body rotation and turn that into, like I said a while ago, a kinetic chain reaction, is
You know
something
who
that's.
else has that in a crazy way? Aaron Rodgers in his prime. Like, do you remember that ball he threw against the Cowboys when he led the comeback against them? I don't know if you remember this. It was like a freezing day, and he threw a 60-yard pass on a line. Like, not there's no air on it because it was the only way it could have gotten through. But and you could watch that, and you can see how he's twisting his body one way and then like violently counteracting it the other, but it all looks smooth. It's crazy.
You see it a lot when guys break the unwritten rule of quarterback play, right? Where they're running, if you're right-handed, you're running to the left.
And you
And it's
throw
like,
away
oh
from
no,
yourself.
you never turn back and you throw it away from yourself. Well, the guys that can do that can separate their hip, their upper body from their hips and
Yeah.
actually get their shoulders in throwing position.
And
If
square.
you can get your shoulders square, yeah, it matters and it helps. If your lower body's in place, but if you can get your shoulder square and your shoulder and your arm are strong, you can do it.
The ball's getting there.
That
Yeah.
those guys, kind of break the mold.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, one thing I do love about Tom House, and I don't know everything about him or whatever. I know just know he's been sort of like a throwing guru for forever. But there were idiots for a while, Randy, and people do this with football too. But personal trainers, a large percentage of them are morons, just so everyone knows. But and they kind of enthrall athletes with their nonsense. And there was a period of time where it was fashionable to get baseball pitchers to throw weighted baseballs. Because the idea was, well, it's making it heavier, so you'll get stronger in your instead of the truth, which is you're altering your pitching motion to throw a weighted ball, right? And Tom House's thing was like, no, you should throw a different type of ball in a different way that will help you. Like, so he was always big on getting pitchers to throw footballs, right? As like a rest and like a way to build up, supporting muscles. But his thing was like, actually, you should probably throw a little bit lighter ball if you want to, build someone up. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting.
The weighted ball stuff's still definitely around,
I think it's really stupid.
but it is evolved now to where you do a lot of holds where you don't release the ball.
That makes sense.
So you work on the D cell. When you do throw heavy, but you also throw light. So you'll throw a 2 pound ball all the way down to like a 2 ounce ball. But the biggest thing, and forgive me on this because it's been a long time since I did this. It was towards the end of my career. But the biggest thing is the holds and the training, the D cell. Essentially, it's, hey, your Ferrari will go as fast as the brakes will stop it. So unless your body knows that it can decelerate the arm, it will not go any faster. So you try to overtrain on the treadmill for the speed aspect of it by throwing the 2 ounce ball, right? So you put the treadmill on 40, you take out running for 4 seconds or however fast you can do it. And then the next time you try to do 5 seconds and then, whatever. So you overtrain the speed. But at the same time, if your body knows that if I propel my arm forward at X miles per hour and it's going to fly off, essentially, and my shoulder's going to just dislocate, it won't do it. So the weighted ball thing, the evolution, and I don't, I haven't researched it in years now because I mean, my kids are young and I'm done. So I'm sure there's, I mean, driveline's kind of the big thing on that now, but I think they've evolved a little bit from my understanding. But yeah, it's come a long way from, hey, just go throw a shot put. It's definitely a lot more intricate than that. But I've always subscribed to I like the long toss theory where you get your arm used to throwing at different angles. Hey, go play shortstop. Let's throw some balls across the diamond at, sidearm, this and that, whatever. Because then your shoulder muscles get used to having to stop your arm from different angles. So you train more than, so when you do go, hey, I'm at 80 pitches, my arm slot just dropped 3 degrees on the spectrum. You're not asking muscles that have never worked before to work 80 pitches into a game. So.
Yeah, don't prep for the Boston Marathon and its famous hill by just
Right.
running on flat courses, right? You're going to
Absolutely.
have an ugly awakening on mile 14 or whatever it is. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, interesting stuff. Bottom line, the sport that you played and were really good at, your body was not intended to throw the ball that many times that hard.
No, it's unfortunate that it allowed me to do it for as many times as it did.
Yeah, exactly. There's a cost to pay for that eventually, where your body's like, I'm not really built to do this.
Yeah, sooner or later your shoulder's like, hey guys, what are we doing here?
Yeah, exactly. All right, man. Hey, as always, we weren't sure what we were going to chat about, and we actually talked endlessly about just whatever popped up, which I always enjoy. Is there anything you want to get off your chest before we reconvene?
Yes. Everybody go Google
Yes.
the Iditarod race. And what you have to do if you encounter a moose that attacks you.
So, Randy is referencing a great story that he sent me, and he was very excited about this story. He's like, I want to talk about this. So, the Iditarod, which I think a lot of you have probably heard of, a famous dog race, right, in Alaska.
Sled race, whatever you want to call it. I'm not familiar with it. Yeah.
And it's sort of iconic, and it's a combination like endurance race. Like,
Yes.
you also have to figure out, like, because you have to carry your own food. You have to feed the dogs. There's protein intake. There's energy output. You have to factor how much sleep do I want? Do I want to just go 20 hours a day and see if I can push it, or do I need to sleep? And the other thing that people may not know is when you're on a sled, when you're the musher or whatever, you're running a lot. You're not just making the dogs pull you. You're running behind the sled and running with them. And like, it's pretty arduous, but it's very common in Alaska for your team to startle a moose. And if a moose gets tangled up with your dogs, who are in traces, they're all tied together. That moose is big enough and powerful enough to kill every dog in your team, including you, if you get caught up in it, and just go running around the tundra like a maniac with with dead dogs hanging off its horns, like with pulling a sled. So if you encounter one, you got to kill it. And so an publicized part of the Iditarod is this happens all the time. And these dudes are and gals. There was a famous Iditarod racer named Susan Butcher, I think. They
I
carry
think you're correct.
44 magnums, and they unload into moose if they encounter it because they're more feared than bears.
Well, they're crazy and they're mean as
They're
hell.
yeah. So have you ever seen a moose like in the wild?
No, I don't think so. No.
So I've seen moose in Alaska, And I've seen a moose in Colorado. The moose in Colorado I saw on a trip, and it was an impressive animal. The moose I saw in Alaska, I saw on a trail, and it came out of the brush, and it looks like it's from the Pleistocene. Like, it is a creature that you look like a saber-toothed tiger should come out of the brush and attack it. Like, that's what it looks like. It looks like it's from another era, and it's a deer. It's just a giant deer. Most people don't realize that. But it is 7 feet high at the shoulder. So if you've ever been around a
Massive.
horse,
Yeah, they're
like
massive animals.
horses are
Massive.
big. Horses are big, impressive creatures, right? A moose makes a horse look like a pony. And they have that huge rack, like, and apparently they have terrible eyesight, and their panic mode is just attack everything around, like flail around and attack until the threat goes away. So yes, Google Iditarod moose encounters, and you'll have a little treat. Randy was on a high for like 3 days thinking about moose encounters. I wanted to have you like hook up with my son because he's very into like animal fights and what would animal happen if this animal fought this animal. You got very excited about this.
No, the moral of the story is, and I won't ruin it for everybody, but you want to be the first guy that gets to fight off the moose and not the second guy that has to kill it.
Oh yeah.
Because
Well, we got to say that part. Come on, we got to say it.
it will significantly hinder your time.
You're going to have a
So
bad
the first
day in terms of
Yeah, you're right. So the first guy, the moose attacks, and he was able to somehow like punch it or beat it off or
evade it. Yeah.
evade it, whatever. Anyway, so he got past it. Well, minutes, hours, I don't know, however long later, second guy encounters the moose, and he was legitimately like on his whatever you call it, the sled, I guess,
Yeah,
whatever the
yeah.
back part is. Like he'd already attacked the dogs or whatever. So he has to shoot it. Well, he shoots it, he kills it, and per Iditarod rules, he now has to field dress it.
Yes. Well, per Alaska law.
Per Alaska law, yeah, you can't any game animal, you can't waste the meat. Which makes, I mean, that's
It's a
good rule
great
for
law. It's a great rule.
conservation, whatever. So the Iditarod has to abide by Alaska law. So he has to spend, I've never cleaned one. I don't know. I've done plenty of deer in my life. I can only imagine how long a moose would take. So this dude's trying to win a race and he's like, well, crap. I guess I got to
Hey,
sit
dude.
here and skin this moose. So when he gets to the next checkpoint, the best part is when he gets to the next checkpoint, he has to I or to tell the representative or whatever, like, hey, by the way, just killed a moose back there.
6 miles back, there's a dead field dressed moose.
I field dressed it. I did all the things I was supposed to do. But so y'all can go have fun and go get it. I'm gonna go try and catch this guy that got out of here with just punching it in the nose or whatever he had to do.
And I'm 7 hours behind him because that's how
Yes.
long it took me to field dress. So you field dressed a deer. A 200-pound buck is an afternoon.
Yeah,
A
that's like
moose is like 1,800 pounds.
for me, it's a couple hours. For my brother-in-law that does it all the time, he'd do it in like 30 minutes. Yeah, moose. Yeah, you're talking about, yeah. Bring a sandwich.
Ed, can you imagine the gut pile of a moose? Like what that's going to attract?
Significantly, I would imagine that you want to get the hell out of there real
Yeah.
fast.
Yeah. So, yes,
Or else
Iditarod
you're gonna fight
challenges.
off some other animals.
Randy and I had some excited you saved a good week of my off season. We had some good excited text exchanges about this and I love the field dress law in Alaska. That's just amazing. That's so great.
For all you young guys out there, when you get older, this is what you have to look forward to,
That's right.
is reading stories about the Iditarod.
That's it. All right. Well, for cranky mooses everywhere, I am Paul Wadlington. This has been Randy Boone. And we're saying keep your 44 Magnum close. Make sure you field dress it. Keep your dog safe. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.